You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with RAFA. From grand tours to group rides, to Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, RAFA exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today, we are in Alpe d'Huez.
Yeah, I'm confident for today, and you have to see how the competitors are for today, but so far so good. Hopefully I get a lot of motivation from it, and I think it's nice for us to ride there, and I think for everyone in the peloton it's special to go up Alpe d'Huez, so it will be a nice day. Yeah. If you see any weakness, then you have to react and gain some time.
Well, we were played in there by Steven Kruiswijk, the Dutch rider who really set the race alight today. Lionel, you're shaking your head already.
The Steven Kruiswijk police.
Kruiswijk. Francois Thomazeau, you spoke to Kruiswijk at the start this morning. And it was, I mean, you obviously had a sense that he was going to do something today.
Of course. I mean, you know, my old experience, my inside knowledge of cycling made me aware that this was Steven's day. No, he was absolutely sheer luck.
The Dutch rider.
I wanted to have a Dutch rider to speak about the Dutch mountain and the Dutch corner. And when I went to the podium, the first guy I saw was Steven.
Well, Steven Kruiswijk did not win the stage, but he certainly did a lot of damage today and had a big influence on the stage. And we're going to talk about all that with Lionel Burney is here.
Hello, Richard.
And
hello.
Orla Shinawy is here as well.
Hello.
Orla had an interesting day today, and we'll hear about that later. But before we discuss today's very exciting stage, and I think our mood's going to be a bit better than it was last night. We've had a bit of correspondence today from people saying we were a bit downbeat last night. But I think today we saw a tremendous stage, a thrilling stage, and we're going to be a bit more upbeat tonight. Spoiler alert.
Well, maybe.
Well, some of us are. Tale of the attack, please, Lionel.
Okay, well, it was stage 12 of the Tour de France from Bourg-Saint-Maurice to Alpe d'Huez. Well, where do we start? As you said, Richard.
Bourg-Saint-Maurice.
Well, we started in Bourg-Saint-Maurice and we came to Alpe d'Huez, which is where we're sitting now. We're sitting outside a bar. It's actually got chilly. This is the first time on this entire Tour de France I've been chilly. It's been roasting hot pretty much since the Vendée.
Got our nice Rafa jackets on, though,
yeah,
all of us.
We have,
team issue.
Team jackets.
Cutting a real dash.
Anyway. Well, it was a hell of a stage, wasn't it? Steven Kruiswijk of Lotto NL Jumbo was leading alone over the top of the Quad Affair and looking good. He had a lead of 6 minutes. It fell a bit to 5 minutes, but he was riding very strongly. At one point, he was being chased or pursued by Mikko Nieve, who almost won yesterday, Warren Barguil and Rafael Majka. Then there was a group which had Valverde in it, and then there was the GC group with Geraint Thomas in his yellow jersey, of course. And really, it all kicked off on Alpe d'Huez, the 21 hairpin bends to the summit here. And, well, the riders fell by the wayside one by one, didn't they? Dan Martin was dropped very early on. Vincenzo Nibali tried something. He was reeled in by Egan Bernal, probably ride of the day by the 21-year-old Colombian riding
for
Team Sky.
For that, I think.
Nairo Quintana attacked as well, and around about that point, Jakob Fuglsang was dropped. I mean, everything was happening. Mikel Landa had a go, Romain Bardet had a go, and then just as riders were looking good, the next minute they were looking bad because Quintana was then struggling with about 6.5 to go. He lost time. Bernal pulled off the front with 4.5 to go, and that left Geraint Thomas to ride in his yellow jersey in support of Chris Froome. So on the road, there was no disputing who the leader of Team Sky was at that point. Kruiswijk was caught. Then there was some chaos. Too many police bikes on the course, probably. Vincenzo Nibali hit the deck after colliding with a bike. Chris Froome had a go, but didn't really get anywhere. Romain Bardet had another go, and then this quartet of riders came to the fore. Bardet, Froome, Dumoulin, and Geraint Thomas. Mikel Landa managed to claw his way back on just in the final kilometre, and he then had a little attack, but Geraint Thomas came round that bend, the one that we see, you know, that we've seen moves go there before, and he took it wide and fast, and he sprinted, pretty much a sprint of his life, to win the stage. The extraordinary thing was that Vincenzo Nibali had almost got back up to that group, and so really we're left kind of none the wiser, other than there's a few more little clues that perhaps Chris Froome isn't as great and as dominant as we thought yesterday. The other big story is the number of withdrawals. Rigoberto Urán didn't start today, still suffering after his injuries from the cobbles. Tony Galopin has pulled out, leaving AG2R down to five riders. Other riders who didn't make it to the finish, Rick Zabel, Grusteff and Marcel Seberg. Ryan Tarame was eliminated, missed a time cut, but really it was the bonfire of the sprinters today. Dylan Groenewegen, Andre Greipel, Fernando Gaviria. If you're a sprinter with a surname that begins with G, it was pretty much a terrible day. So the jerseys all stay on the same shoulders. And now the question is, well, Geraint Thomas was playing it down afterwards. No, Froome is still the leader, blah, blah, blah. But at what point now do we have to say Geraint Thomas is the leader?
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel, explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Hi, I'm Katie from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that cycling is the answer to many of our daily challenges. It gives me time to think and relax, it's my favorite form of transport, and it's helped me see the world in a different way. It's a part of my life that I couldn't do without. Riding with Rafa can introduce you to community that you might not know existed and bring you new friends and adventures. We have 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world with 300 rides a week with thousands of people. So wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our headline sponsor. And of course, we will be running a poll to find our Pedaleur de Charme for week two of the Tour de France. Lawson Craddock won week one. Lots of contenders for week two. I mean, maybe Stephen Clouswick, after today's ride, will come into the frame. But John Degenkolb has won. Edvald Boasenhagen for a lovely story that we witnessed at the start this morning, where he had took a bike from Team Sky yesterday when his bike broke. And was fined, and also Servus Canavan, who gave him the bike, was fined. Boasenhagen turned up at the Team Sky bus this morning with a bundle of €150 to give to Servus Canavan to repay him the fine that he was given, which was
definitely my pick.
Quite a touching moment. But Pedaleur de Charme, Rafa Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt will be awarded to the lucky winner of Pedaleur de Charme for week two, and we'll run the poll tomorrow, I think. So what a stage today, anyway. I mean, where do you start? Stephen Clouswick, what a ride from him. I mean, a guy who came pretty close to winning the Giro a couple of years ago, and he just held that six-minute advantage, which was extraordinary, when Team Sky had numbers on the front, chasing pretty hard. And it meant that when they got to Alpe d'Huez, they didn't have many people left. As Geraint Thomas told us at the finish, they used Mikhail Kwiatkowski much earlier than they would have intended to otherwise. It left a lot for Egan Bernal to do, almost from the foot of Alpe d'Huez. He had to take over. He rode in the front for 8 kilometres. But when he pulled off 5 kilometres to go, it was only Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome left there. That was the moment where you thought, we're going to see now whether what Geraint Thomas told us yesterday is true, that he is riding for Chris Froome. And what happened then more or less confirmed that.
Just got to say, huge credit to Lotto Eno Jumbo, because they started the day with Primoz Roglic in 5th place, Stephen Kraalsreich in 6th place, and rather than just trying to conserve those places through the whole of the tour and go, well, that's a great tour for us, two men in the top 6 or whatever, they really used that strength to try something audacious. And it was audacious, a long, long way from the finish. 73 kilometres, I think, he went. He built up a big lead. OK, they let him go, thinking, well, you know, we'll reel him back in. But he was in the virtual lead for a long, long time. Slips from 6th to 8th now, which is kind of,
he rode outstandingly well to minimise his losses after being caught, because after an effort like that, you know, he might have blown completely and lost minutes, and he didn't. And I thought the ride that he did after being caught was exceptional.
To me, I mean, the interesting thing is that Lotto the Jumbo emerge as the team that challenges, that dares challenge Team Sky, because the Movistar, as usual, you know, could I say the tactical sense, you know, are again a little bit odd. I mean, they kind of lost Alejandro Valverde now, who will be probably looking for a stage win, maybe in Mond or something like that. Nairo Quintana was dropped again. We're left with Mikel Landa, who is a bit of a free agent. You know, we never know exactly what he does and who he rides for. But I mean, that's and actually, it's very telling that Lotto, Jumbo is now the almost the only team trying to challenge Team Sky, because once again, cycling is a team sport, and all the other rivals of Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome, look at Romain Bardet. Okay, he did a brave race today. He attacked a couple of times, you know, showed French flair and spirit and whatever you want, but he's only got four teammates left, and it'll be a real problem in the Pyrenees. Tom Dumoulin, let's face it, is alone in the Team Sunweb in the mountains, so he has to fend for himself. Well, we mentioned Movistar. What's left? Vincenzo Nibali had hard luck, but who's left with him in the mountains? Nobody either. So, you know, if we consider cycling to be a team sport, and we saw what Team Sky did today, you know, hats off to Lotto Jumbo.
But there's a different complexion on the race tonight. I think we were a bit downbeat last night because it looked like Sky had a real stranglehold on the race, and it was going to be very difficult for anybody to challenge that. And I think today, with that audacious move, as you say, by Lotto NL Jumbo, there were chinks in the armour, and you know, they were reduced numbers. A guy like Wout Poels went very early. You know, they're vulnerable, I think. And Derek Geraint Thomas, the other point about that is that a strong team is only of use if you've also got the strongest rider in the race. And I think on the evidence of Alpe d'Huez today, there's a very good argument to make for Tom Dumoulin being the strongest rider in the race. I mean, the thing about Tom Dumoulin, and this is interesting, I think, in the context of talking about Team Sky and the way that they ride. Because they ride, they control it, they keep a steady pace, a fast but steady pace. They're riding as if they're Tom Dumoulin's team. They ride that way to deter the explosive attacking riders like Quintana and so on from jumping away. That's not how Tom Dumoulin rides. So it actually works for Tom Dumoulin.
I'd agree, you know, to that to a certain extent. What was fascinating for me in the finale, in the last 5Ks, because it was, you had attacks and you had this absolutely amazing picture image of the four leading contenders riding side by side.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
And what does it mean? So it's a nice picture on TV, but what does it mean? It means they're all looking at the power meters, and they're all at the same. They all have the sub number of watts.
Well, aren't they?
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm not against power meters. There's a big dispute about that. Should they be banned in racing or not? The thing is, it's a little bit like Formula One. There's fine tuning to that. You could tell at some stages that the guys were attacking and then stopping because, oh my God, you know, so power meters are not part of the game. Instead, maybe that instead of, you know, ruining the aggressive cycling, they make it much more subtle.
It's interesting because Dumoulin, and we've talked about this in the past, that previously, before power meters, when riders were dropped, that was it, they were gone. With Dumoulin, you can never write him off because he is, more than any other rider, he's riding to his power meter. He rides steadily. He's not able to vary his pace. In the same way as even Froome. You know, Froome can attack and jump away. Dumoulin will gradually just climb back. And that must be very difficult to ride against.
Yeah, but my impression is probably, well, I disagree a little bit on that, because probably Dumoulin, in my opinion, is probably the one who looks the least at his power meter for one very good reason. I don't think he'll win the Tour, to be honest, because it's too isolated, and I think Team Sky are too strong, and they've got the two, maybe three strongest riders in the peloton. But Dumoulin is exactly the typical Grand Tour winner. You know, look at Miguel Indurain, Greg LeMond, Jacques Anquetil, Bernard Hinault, Eddy Merckx, Bradley Wiggins. Who are these guys? Time trial specialists who lost weight to become climbers and Grand Tour winners. You might say Geraint Thomas is a little bit in the same mold, but so he actually rides very, very traditionally. You know, it's just all these guys, Fignon, Stephen Roach, they would climb at their pace. You know, they're not true climbers. So that's the way he does it. He does it like the old school way, in a sense. It may pay off, but I'm once again, I'm a little bit worried about this isolation in the team.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. You can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at sciencesport.com with the code SISCP25. And we're very grateful to Science and Sport for their support. It helps us be here covering the Tour in such large numbers. Four of us here sitting around this table. Haven't heard...
Microphone. for not enough microphones even for all of us. Uncharacteristically quiet here.
You are, but we're going to hear from you soon, Orla. We're keeping you. We're keeping you for later. Geraint Thomas then, I mean, he seemed, when he came into the press conference after that, genuinely shocked to have won that stage. And I suppose all of us are shocked that Geraint Thomas, I mean, I said last night that there's no way Geraint Thomas was going to win the Tour de France. What?
I'm just laughing because the last time you absolutely guaranteed something about Geraint Thomas, it was before the opening time trial last year, when you said absolutely Geraint Thomas will not be in the yellow jersey tomorrow. And so I think for Geraint Thomas's sake, if you just keep predicting things against him, then he's probably going to have quite a good Tour de France.
I'm sure he's listening to the podcast.
Richard, you also predicted that he'd be joining BMC Racing at some point, and you stuck to that for so long.
The thing is, at the Giro, we kept saying Simon Yates has won a Tirreno Adriatico, and then he'd won two Tirreno Adriatico. It was, everybody said, Simon Yates is going really well, so therefore he will win the Giro. Mm. He was in the form of his life. He was better than anybody else. Therefore, he will win the Giro. What nobody factored in was the collapse that came. Mm. And I'm not saying that Geraint Thomas will collapse, but he himself is saying that this is uncharted territory for him. And we don't know. He's never put together a race over 3 weeks. So although he is arguably the strongest rider in the race, although I would say he won the stage today, I would say that he dug very deep today to hang on at points, and he won because of the line he took into the final corner.
Well, yeah, that's true, but the history of cycling says if you have the yellow jersey at Alpe d'Huez, more often than not, you go on to win the Tour. This stat gets a bit complicated because of the Lance Armstrong years and all the other riders have been stripped of Tour victories, but Alpe d'Huez is halfway through the race is a significant obstacle, and look at what there is to come. It's Geraint Thomas territory to Mende, to Carcassonne, then the Pyrenees. There's only one summit finish, then there's the little 65 kilometer stage, which I think oddly might be his Achilles heel, because that will go straight from the gun. Where's he going to lose 1:39 to Chris Froome without sitting up or without working?
Where did Simon Yates lose an hour and a half?
Yeah, I know, but this is slightly different, yeah, Rich.
When did Geraint Thomas lost, you know, about 10 minutes in 2015? The difference is, in 2015 he was working very hard for Chris Froome and for the team in the first week, and he was working in the mountains, and now he's coming to the Pyrenees. Well, of course, having worked hard for himself and for the team in the mountains, but he said it himself. He was kind of left alone during the first week, didn't have to make all the efforts. So he's a much fresher rider than he was. He rode the Dauphiné, won it. He didn't ride the Giro. I mean, lots of, you know, I know I said Chris Froome will win the Tour, and I stick to it because I'm
stubborn. He said he'd be a minute ahead tonight. Yeah.
Well, he is above the others. Oh, well, not Tom Dumoulin. Okay. Let's forget it.
But Dumoulin would be ahead of Froome without that penalty on the Mur de Bretagne stage.
But still, you know, there are many little things that plead for Geraint. And in the same time, well, being a traditionalist and being the grumpy old man of the team, I mean,
we've got two of that.
Lionel, not too grumpy, the old man. I mean, Lionel is right in terms of patterns. Patterns have shown in the past that when you win Alpe d'Huez, you win the Tour. But also when you're dominant in the first mountaintop finishes of the Tour, you win the Tour. So there you are, Ola.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say about that, because it's often said about Geraint Thomas how he was so close to the podium and then he lost this whole chunk of time towards the end. But actually, what I understand is that he didn't necessarily lose all of that time because of a lack of form, but he knew he didn't have the form to ride onto the podium, but he could have ridden into the top 10, and we've said about the fact that he's never even finished in the top 10. But apparently what he said at the end of that stage was that he decided to sit up. Mm. He said, I could ride for a top 10, but my job now is actually to look after Chris Froome. So he deliberately kept his legs, rested as much as he could so that he could finish the Tour for Chris Froome.
And that's, again, we saw that tonight, that selflessness of Geraint Thomas. You know, I mean, when Egan Bernal peeled off with 5 kilometres to go, the yellow jerseys on the front doing a job for Chris Froome, setting up an attack for Chris Froome. Mm. And is it really, I mean, I'm sceptical about whether there's any friction there, but it is interesting, you know, watching at the finish there, Chris Froome riding away with his bodyguard. You know, Geraint Thomas doesn't have a bodyguard. And Froome is on the radio all the time. You know, you could see it today. He was communicating all the time with the car. And you get the sense very much that Froome is still top dog.
Of course, yeah. You know, talking of patterns, there's one thing I mean, Team Sky are impressive. They're doing a hell of a job. But they seem to want to change the patterns in many ways. But doing that, they probably waste. That's one thing I have against Dave Brailsford. I think, in a way, if Geraint Thomas was really Grand Tour, winning material, well, you wasted 5 or 6 or 10 years. Mm. Are you going to do the same with Egan Bernal? I mean, I've never ever seen a Grand Tour winner pulling for a leader ever. I mean, Eddy Merckx never pulled for anybody. Greg LeMond never pulled for anybody. Laurent Fignon didn't pull for anybody. Chris Froome pulled for Bradley Wiggins.
Well, LeMond would say he did in 85, wouldn't
he? But I mean, it's odd. I mean, you heard Team Sky say, well, it's great to see Egan Bernal pulling for 8Ks for. But I mean, if he's a really Grand Tour, I mean, you don't see. Do you really see Chavez pulling for the Yates brothers?
Oh, come on, Francois Bernal is 21 years of age. It's his first Grand Tour.
But I mean, you don't
good
use
enough. You don't use
a 21-year-old rider. You think he's Grand Tour winner material to pull for the team. You never do that. You spare him. You know, I mean, there
he's
are other
16
guys,
minutes down
well, David Godu and other guys. There are other guys, 22 years old, 21 years old here, who are learning their trade to become Grand Tour winners. They're not pulling.
What? So you should say, "Oh, Egan Bernal, you're a Grand Tour champion of the future, so therefore don't work for the team." No, that is in your words.
It's the first time in my memory of cycling that a future Grand Tour winner has pulled for his
Miguel
Indurain. Never. He never pulled for Delgado.
He
never.
Did. He didn't.
Not for 8Ks. Never.
Not for 8Ks.
is there not an argument, though, that he's learning alongside the very best in the business? I mean, it's a great apprenticeship.
But you learn in the wheel. You don't lean in front of the bus.
I think that's old school. I think that's really old school. Francois, sorry.
I stick to that. Look, I think my impression is that they're wasting him.
If you're building a team, hang on.
Was our Egan Bernal at the finish?
If you're building a team and you're looking at a long-term future, what better way to show Bernal what it's all about than he rides on the front for 7Ks for Froome and Thomas?
Bernal will win the Vuelta next year. There's a prediction.
But what's wrong with... I mean, that's a great learning process. This is what it takes. This is what... When he is in a leader's jersey in a race, he will know exactly how much his teammates are going through the mill for him, what they are doing for him. I think that's great.
I think I'm on Lionel's side on this. But you were our Egan Bernal at the finish, Francois, because we were a little bit late up to the finish. And so you did the real legwork for us.
Old school cycling works from time to time.
Not only identifying Kreuzwijk as the rider to speak to this morning, but also finding Dave Brailsford and Nicola Portal at the finish and hearing a little bit from them. So let's hear from them now. Dave Brailsford and then Nicola Portal, the sports director at Team Sky.
I must say, Kreuzwijk did an exceptional ride. To stay out for as long as he did and maintain what he did for as long as he did was pretty impressive. But I think he lost it, he started to climb at 4:30 and then lost that during. And we thought if he got to the bottom at 4:30, then he wasn't going to win. But still, it's impressive. It's an impressive move. But the guys have worked really hard. We knew this 3-day block was going to be one of the hardest of the whole race. And managing your effort over those 3 days has been pretty critical. And yesterday was hard, there's no doubt about it. Probably harder than everybody expected it to be, which had an impact on today, I think. But the guys stepped up, did tremendously well. And I was very, very pleased to see particularly Egan do a tremendous job. That the 8K there must have been a long 8K for him, because it was vital that he played that role there. But equally, that's what he bought him for. And for a young guy in his first tour, 21 years old, to ride up Alpe d'Huez with Froome and G on your wheel, that's quite an experience, and that's what he's here to learn. And he'll be learning a lot from that today.
Yes, 21 years old, first Grand Tour Alpe d'Huez after, let's say, 4,000 and a bit more game of climbing, and riding like this, dropping his compatriot, he got like a nice future in front of him. But it's just unbelievable how his talent is huge. To attack with Froome and Jay was supposed to follow, And then if their guys came back, Giro Foschini can have a go. So that was just perfect. But obviously, I think, you know, for G winning on the top of Alpe d'Huez is I mean, yesterday he won the first mid finish of his career on the Tour. But winning on the top of Alpe d'Huez with the yellow jersey, dropping Quintana, Nibali, all those guys, that's yeah, big, big, big achievement for him. We keep to the same position. I think we have got theoretically more chance, you know, to win the Tour with Froome. But with Jay like this and flying like he is, it's just perfect. We keep our two cards, and day by day we go like this.
Hey, don't forget, you can listen to Kilometre Zero, our morning show, every weekday during the 2018 Tour de France. Kilometre Zero is supported by Hansgrohe.
A little reminder there to listen to our daily Monday to Friday morning show, Kilometre Zero, supported by Hansgrohe. Now, we stayed in a very nice house last night, which had Hansgrohe showers and taps, didn't it?
It did. It was a very kind gesture from a listener, Simon Lund. I cocked up last night. I read the website address incorrectly.
Do it again then.
Basically, over the winter, Simon emailed us and said, I have a house near La Rosière. Would you like to stay in it when the Tour visits? It's not quite finished, but next year it will be open to walkers and cyclists and anyone who, well, winter sports people who want to visit the area.
Or just people.
Just people. A stunning house. Really, really lovely. Oldschoollamazure.com. So that's old school, then LAMASURE.com. And over the winter, when they're ready to open, he has offered a 10% discount for friends of the podcast if anyone wants to book.
Wow.
Old school. That's why I felt well in this place.
Yeah, old school.
It was, but the food that was left for us was stunning, really. We couldn't eat it all. We had to take some of it away with us
evening,
for lunch.
Some very animated conversation. It was great fun. I should say, when we turned the recorder off there, Francois just said that he didn't agree with anything he just said. Anyway, Kilometre Zero today was Francois telling us about a story that he broke back in 1998, the Festina scandal, and it was a brilliant listen. I inflicted Francois's voice on him in the car, and it was a great listen, a real fascinating insight into journalism, actually, and how it worked 20 years ago, and how fact-checking and evidence and things like that were so important, rather than just spreading innuendo on Twitter, which is what tends to happen now. But tomorrow's Kilometre Zero, Lionel, is...
Well, I went down to Dutch Corner just to see what that was all about. And I was expecting a kind of an unruly party, but actually I kind of unearthed a bit of a different story of the Tour, the concerns about security and safety, and how the atmosphere on Dutch Corner was really dampened down a bit, and why that was. So it was it turned into a bit of a... a report on the Tour and where it is now. I mean, we've noticed driving around the race how much more security there is now. One of the new innovations that I've seen every time you try to leave the course or join the course, there are like farm vehicles or trucks parked maybe 500 metres or 400 metres away from the course. They're obviously really concerned about the prospect.
Snowplow today.
Yeah.
I mean, the crowds were pretty... small on
compared to normal. Alpe d'Huez was quiet. There were some real moments where the bottlenecks of fans, but really very quiet because they closed the roads from so far out, and you had to be here, you know, 2, 3, 4 days ago to basically get a good spot on the mountain.
Yeah, in the old days it was like, you know, the sea opening in front of you, you know, a sea of fans, and it took about 8 hours to make it down to Grenoble if you had the bad luck of staying there, and it's gone. In a way, it's a good thing. Were the Dutch excited about Stefan Kees?
They were, and Tom D. They were very excited about both Special K
Tom Dumoulin's gonna win the Tour de France, isn't he?
I thought that was Vincenzo Nibali, Richard.
Oh yeah, sorry, maybe I said that. Orla had an interesting day today. Orla, we're going to hear a little bit of audio from your day, and it's for a Kilometre Zero that will come on Monday, but tell us what you did today.
Yes, I spent the day in the car with Rod Ellingworth, the Team Sky coach, who has been coached to a lot of the top British guys since he set up the Under 23 Academy in Italy quite a number of years ago. And it came about partly because of yesterday, really, when one of his riders, Mark Cavendish, was the last rider to cross the line, and the other of his riders, Geraint Thomas, was the first to cross the line. So both of those guys came through his academy together. And Rod had been up at the top with Geraint, getting the yellow jersey. But then, of course, realised that Mark was going to be the last to cross the line. So he went down to the 200 metre to go, Mark, just to be there, just to see him and just to show Mark that he was there for him. So it was very touching. So and just incredibly fitting that he was telling me all of these stories about Geraint Thomas in his younger days and how he's coached him and toughened him up and all the rest. But toughened him up maybe isn't quite right because he's always been a tough character, but how he's given him a bit of race toughness, I guess, on the day that Geraint Thomas wins on Alpe d'Huez. It was quite special, actually.
So we'll hear a little bit now. I mean, you were in the car as the race radio was telling Rod and everyone in the car what was going on in the race. And so we'll hear a little bit of his reaction to that and also an interesting little tidbit about what it might mean for Team Sky.
Geraint Thomas, victory goes to Geraint.
Jeez, we're on the stage again. Well done, G. Good job, man. Oh, Jesus Christ, that's some win up here for G, flipping Alpe d'Huez, isn't it? Eh? I think that's pretty flipping special, that one, isn't it? G winning there just puts things on a slightly different level, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And burnout. Well, just, you know, really sort of puts his foot, you know, right in the mix, doesn't he? You know, he's really there to back up after yesterday. It's pretty special.
So that was Rod Ellingworth, and that will Orla's day with Rod in a Team Sky car will feature in a Kilometre Zero. I think that's for Monday, that episode, and we'll maybe release more material from that day that you spent there, because I think there was an interesting insight into how Team Sky had planned for this day as well. Any other business from today? I mean, Vincenzo Nibali was a story today.
His crash, or the collision with the motorbike, we're still getting to the bottom of this. This will probably shake out in the wash tomorrow, but when you saw how close Nibali got to coming back, he's good, isn't he? He's riding really well, and that's a really unfortunate incident because he's lost time when perhaps he should have gained it.
Yeah, well, he's down to fourth overall. He is fourth overall at 2:37. Primoz Roglic just behind him. He didn't attack at Bend 5, as we did see Roglic corner as we came round. Mm-hmm. A lot of pictures up for Roglic, and his family and girlfriend were there, apparently. The big disappointment is Movistar. I mean, you know, so much expectation around their three-pronged attack. It's looked, you know, Mark Soler has been looked like a very useful ally had his team leaders been a bit stronger. Mikel Landa did come back today. I think he's still suffering from the crash that he had on the Roubaix stage. Mm. So we might see a better Mikel Landa in the Pyrenees. He is seventh overall at 3:13. But I hope that teams take inspiration from Lotto and El Jumbo today. Mm. I really do. Because, as you said, they showed real ambition with
but
their...
But to be fair, Movistar have tried that 2 days in a row, getting Valverde up the road.
No, and
I think Quintana...
And Thomas said that, actually, tonight.
Yeah, I think Quintana, he made that move, fell back, and then got dropped. I think that tells you everything you need to know about the way these races are ridden. The selection from the back, the difficulty of attacking. That made Romain Bardet's move look... so good, because he sustained that for much, much longer than Quintana managed. But yeah, Movistar, but I mean, they've gone from this sort of trident, a fork, you know, one of those forks where one of the prongs is bent and it's very unpleasant to use. That's what they are now.
Well, I mean, they're worse than that. I think they're
a skewer.
But once again, what's new? I mean, you know, I love José Luis Arrieta. He's a great guy. You know, I like Eusebio Unzué very much. And some of these guys are, you know, great riders. But what have they been doing for the past, I should say, almost 25 years, you know? When did they last, you know, attack and launch a successful from time to time in the Vuelta?
Quintana,
you know, is on form. But otherwise, they always ride, like, very conservative.
This is why Alberto Contador never rode for...
Yeah,
Movistar.
That's probably the way. You know, it's very, in a way, disappointing. You have the impression that they're happy to have three guys in the top 15, and it's.
But you know, cool, if someone's going to beat Team Sky, it's not going to be somebody who launches these Bardet Quintana style attacks and then is gradually reeled in. It's going to be Tom Dumoulin, who you can't get rid of. You can't shake him off. I mean, if he's dropped, he comes back. And I think that's a very difficult thing to ride against. If Quintana's dropped, if Bardet are dropped, they don't tend to come back.
Maybe you remember 2 years ago in the Vuelta, there was a kind of dispute. I mean, it was all very artificial and it was created by the Spanish press, but about power meters, like Quintana and Contador and other guys were saying, oh, we ride the Latin way, you know, like following our hearts and attacking, and we don't even have power meters, we don't know what it is. Whereas, you know, Team Sky and the other teams, you know, that's still, they're all, it's kind of mechanical, robotic riding, which is bullshit. Let's because they have very good power meters themselves. But you know what? Maybe they should look at the power meters a little bit less or a little bit more. I don't know. But there's something wrong there in that tuning.
So on the night that Tom Dumoulin confirmed that he'll win the Tour de France, and and Francois Thomazeau disagreed with everything he said, we should wrap things up. And
just one final word for Adam Yates. 28 minutes plus. Down today, a bad day on Alpe d'Huez, but possibly a stage winner in Pyrenees. Who knows?
Yeah, we spoke to Matt White this morning from Mitchelton Scott, and he had said that really today was the last day to see whether Adam Yates still had any realistic ambitions on GC. He didn't suspect that he was going to be able to, though. He said that the cobbles have taken their toll, the last couple of days have taken their toll, and that if... And the heat as well, yeah, it's been really oppressive. And he said by the end of today, if, as is the case, Adam Yates was out of contention, that it would all be about the stage win. So Yates might be going for the stage win. Nieves tried a couple of times, hasn't quite managed it. But the other thing I think to note is that all the main sprinters, apart from Sagan, are now out of the race. And so you've got an awful lot more teams now who have very little to gain for the rest of the race other than going for the stage wins. And it'll be interesting to see how that manifests itself over the next couple of days.
Yeah, very could be a breakaway point. Tomorrow.
Very good point by Ola. I mean, one of the winners of the day is Peter Sagan, you know, because all the other sprinters are out of contention. So it was, yeah.
Well, Alexander Kristoff.
I mean, we don't want to get into personal stuff here, but Sagan released a statement last night that he's splitting up from his wife just 9 months after they had a baby son, Marlon. Sad news. It's very sad news. And slightly strange that this statement was released in the middle of the Tour de France, but he's still here and he's going to win the green jersey. He's going to probably win a few more stages. But as you say, tomorrow to Valence in particular, which has been marked as a sprint stage, may not now be, because which of the teams that are going to bring it back for a sprint? We don't know. It could be a breakaway. Lots of teams will be trying for that. For now, let's leave it. Francois, thank you very much.
Well, as usual, I have my little bit of Francois.
Oh, God, sorry.
No, but don't worry about it.
We were talking about this in the car.
I have a question for you. Did the bell of the Ladbrokes Church ring today?
I heard it ringing, I think. Did I?
Did I? Did you? Did you
I
not?
I think I did.
Because normally it always rings when the stage finishes, and because the priest is a Dutchman, or has been a Dutchman for a long time, it used to ring even harder when a Dutch rider was about to win. So he might have been ready to ring, you know, very wildly when Stephen Kay was in the
Stephen
lead.
Kay.
We'll hear a bit more about the Dutch priest in Kilometer Zero tomorrow morning.
But you were telling me another bit of local information.
Oh, yeah,
that's
something very few people know. When you go up to L'Albès, you go from the valley that's called Oisans, because Bourg-d'Oisans is because the valley is called Oisans, and it was a terrible disaster in the 13th century. Okay, it's a long time ago, in 1219 actually, when, because there was a lake where Bourg-d'Oisans is now, there was a huge lake with a kind of natural dam blocking the lake, and in 1219,
who won the Tour de France that year?
I wasn't, well, you know, it was just, I think I started in 2020, so in 1220, so I can't remember, but anyway, yeah, there was a lake there and natural dam, and for whatever reason the natural dam, you know, broke open, and these tons and kiloliters of water flooded the valley, rolled down the valley, and actually flooded Grenoble, and there were thousands of deaths. It's one of the, you know, worst catastrophes of the Middle Ages.
You thought Team Sky could be a bit like that coming down the valley today, but it didn't turn out like that. And so we have an exciting race ahead of us, I think. For now, thank you very much, Francois.
Thanks.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Orla.
Merci beaucoup.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by Will Jones.